Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land, his practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land. His practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
Welcome, folks. Well, welcome to what I think is going to be a very interesting show. Your ex-conservative 2-hour show, Monday through Friday, telling you about what it's like to hear the things that you know what's going on in your head. You hear certain things, but you never hear the media talk about it. You never hear the pundits talk about what's really happening. Brought to you by the 1950s, having seen it with my eyes, my own eyes, the lived. And live to tell about it. Live to tell about it. Born in 1950, watching the incrementalization of evil take over virtue. I'm going to be having a very interesting day today, a very interesting discussion, because I've been saying for a long time, it's the culture, stupid. Or the economy. Well, if our politics are local, then all economies are personal. It's the economy. It isn't the economy. It's the culture. It's the kind of people we become. They use the economy. Hey, who are they, Tony? Well, you know, all those people we sort of know are in charge, but we can't somehow come to terms with it, and that's why we listen to you guys on conservative talk radio, because you seem to sort of pull things together, because we as regular people are too dumb to think for ourselves. Who are those people? You're going to ask? It's all those on the left that, through the sum of its parts being greater than the whole, seem to have taken control, seem to have made the exceptions to the rule, the new rulers of the earth. Well, I've been telling you, I'm in a unique, unique situation to talk about race. I'm in a unique position to talk about bigotry. I'm in a unique position to talk about false narratives. Having been brought up on the right side of town with the political class, the lawyers, the doctors, the judges, and their children, being ridiculed for having the audacity, the nerve, the pure unmitigated gall to live across the street where, much to their own leftist causes, be careful what you ask for, you just might get it, with some new low-income housing. I grew up 9 years, 15 years before I left that area, going to school, competing with those nice boys and girls. mostly white, well, all white, actually. What am I talking about? I lived in a white world for a good, until I was about 15 years old. Well, Brockton, Massachusetts, a suburb of Boston, you know, it was multicultural. When I went to school, there was always a handful of blacks, African-American Negroes, we called them. I mean, after all, aren't we Caucasian? But all of a sudden it makes it white and black, you know? Caucasian? No, we can't. No, not even Caucasian. Let's do white. I've been watching this stuff, folks. I've been watching it, baby. So I'm in a unique position. You see, I never bought into that. I never bought into that myth. Those seeds of drought through the power of suggestion that the media in Hollywood seems to suggest that we behave. No, I never bought into that because I was always part of who I was. I didn't have much else to be thankful for. I didn't have things. I only had knowing who I was as an Italian. Boy, we were celebrated. We were the celebrated. And as a matter of fact, speaking of the color thing, we had to finally give way to the Negroes, the African Americans, the blacks, for being the new sexy kid on the block. Oh, it didn't get me anywhere because I was actually jealous by the whites and jealous by the blacks because we were the only ones they were even closely intimidated by. So I'm in a unique position to talk about this stuff, okay? So I came up with a word that I think suits, a pseudo-racist. You know, when people say to somebody, oh, what are you, a pseudo-psychologist? It means that they think, or the person doing the projection thinks that you're really not a psychologist, but he's claiming you're trying to be one. So what are you, a pseudo-psychologist? So I started thinking about that, and all this false narrative by, you know, I always see this. When people don't have any good thing to say about something and they use ridicule, it's because they don't have an answer that can defeat the argument with logic, reason, and deduction. It's as simple as that. If they did, they use it. So they use ridicule instead. So I've always understood, even as a kid, that ridicule is irrelevant. It's only as powerful as the power you give it. I mean, that's what the left does, isn't it? The tree falls in the woods and nobody was there to really hear it make a sound. Did it really fall? I got busted for things that people heard but didn't see. If I robbed the bank and didn't get caught, did I really do it? Years later, finding a little fingerprint, yeah, they saw that I did it, and I paid the price. Hey, natural law, you know. Newton's third rule, each action and opposite reaction, right? Come on, you got to expect it. My mother always told me, I might not catch you now, but I'll catch you, and when I catch you, you're going to get a choices back. So come up with it, confess. I never confess. I'm a liberal, I understand that one. I understand that one. If you can't see me, I ain't going to tell on myself. God, I've always wondered about people that told on themselves because of the guilt they must have had for the crimes they committed, even when... Well, I think it speaks to a person who basically has a certain sense of goodness, a certain sense of shame. Maybe that's almost illustrative of someone who's basically... was insane at the time of the crime, because if they're willing to confess it, even after they do it, even after they know what they're doing is wrong, and they still do it, and then they later confess, maybe that does illustrate the same thing, because I would never do that. No, I come from an experienced background, because I'll talk about evil and virtue. That's all this is about. That's all this show's about. But I got to thinking about the paradigm of the left and how they've taken power. And I speak of, because I'm sort of pissed at the world not getting the message from anybody out there being able to give the message, while the negative message, the propaganda, a word I first heard in the sixth grade, meaning big talk. I remember the exact definition. I don't remember too much, but that was one that sort of hit me. I don't know why. I mean, we had those fire drills, you know, in the 50s and the 60s where, you know, in case of an atomic attack. I remember that. I remember the fire drills. I remember the order that we had to be taught. I remember the sensibility of survival. I sort of got it. I grew up watching Queen for. I bring this tale up all the time as a basis point because, again, like most advertising, top of the mind awareness, you got to drill it home. You got to drill it home. Either, and that's what I do. I'm a constant reminder of really what's going on because you've been had, folks. If you've been born before 1975, or if you don't have your head on straight, seeing between the lines, seeing the incrementalization, seeing the sum of its parts as they have progressed, and some things that are not even stated, you have to really do look and you have to be able to see, and not too many people can do it. I can't. Never thought I'd be able to talk about it, but thank goodness to technology, huh? It isn't all bad. Just most of it, most of the time. To the degree that technology is used without virtue is to the degree that technology will be used against us and hyperventilating evil at that. I mean, look at the work a little bit of electricity and mechanical engineering does after it's been programmed, huh? Look at how many people it replaces from the workforce, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to talk about this left-right paradigm. It's really a black-white paradigm. And I'm going to be talking about truth. I'm going to be speaking truth to color, truth to power, which is color. I'm going to be speaking about the fact that I know, and I've been watching you. Oh, I've been watching, baby. I've been watching you be used in the trick bag by the powers, the manipulators, the persuaders of the world, the ones who instigate and create a formation of attitude that further creates a struggle between the new. See, I grew up with my father and my mother saying, and you know, you almost use this as a quotation. You know, there's people starving on the other side of the world. There's people starving on the other side. And we always thought, even when we had nothing, just except the clothes on our back, my mother cleaned us up. We had new clothes every school year, but only once. And we ate. But I remember stealing the chicken bones off my brother's plates because I'll tell you what, she had the bread, she had the salad, she had the dinner. She fed us what we needed to be fed with, and we even had dessert. We were fine. But we really also were taught how fine it was in parts of the country. We were, as a child in the 50s, grown up to feel like, well, man, I shouldn't be moaning about those kids that I grew up with on the other side of the street from the political class. The trust fund babies, the doctor's children, and the judge's children, and the attorney's children that I grew to school with. No, I got that. I was ridiculed all day long. There was a separation of Italian, upper class white, that class, no class. This, everything's a class struggle, and they want you to be a victim. I caught it.
I've just had it. I'm serious. I've had it up to here, you know. Haven't you? Haven't you had it? Well, now I've got it. I've got a rant and roll. I know what I know. Unlike most of you that think you know, you think. Unlike most of you and you and you and yes, maybe even you indeed, not only me, but gosh, 2 and 3 aren't great numbers. Now, are they? You see, I've been watching this, and I've just had it. I've had it up to here. Having come down there, from there in hell, the hell we fear not, indeed fear not. Italian, never white, always American, but not recognized. No, why Italian? The wine with the waters parted, diluted to a hyphen. Assimilate. Dilate, dilute, pollute with abundanza. Pollute that which is the water to the wine. Yes, water's parted, now we're white. I'm telling you, I've had it. I've had it up to here. Check it out. Not all things are black and white. Italian, I am. Wrong, oh, right. Rules to break, satisfy the needs. Rules to break, pay the price, fall on the sword, accept the heat. Rules to break, the fun we make. Do as I say, not as I do. Were the rules we had to follow, but you got caught. was the burden for which price paid. You compete with life. Do all you want. Do all you want. The risk, but oh, it's fun. Pay the price. Shut your mouth. Oh, woe is me. Dad, bail me out. I don't belong. Take him out, officer. That's my son. The Joneses, while being swept up, wood must keep up. Never mind. Air is thin. Awareness is thinner. Feeling faint. So high. Looking down on others. Lucky are we. The anointed ones, yes, the anointed, we know better, who better than those, and yes, even those who think we know. You see, folks, not all things are black and white. My name is Tony Venuti, and you listen to the law.
Folks, you're listening to, I'm going to change my hours. But right now we're going to turn into a little ball of confusion with music from the 60s. Music celebrating liberalism. Music that made the leftist agenda cool. To this very day, we're celebrating celebrities. Oh!
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
And I fought. Vote for me and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on.
Well, the only person talking about love and brother is the preacher. And it seems nobody's interested in learning but the teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, divinity.
Groups from the 60s and 70s, which helped to shape the liberal agenda from which we had the wool pulled over our eyes through the pop culture season. The season of the witch. The pop culture season where the musicians we looked up to, the ones that are sort of running the government right now. I always thought about those rich kids I grew up with. If they ever had their way. If they were ever able to use celebrity and popularity as a way to get into the White House. I remember thinking about Shirley Temple when she became ambassador, I think, or something. And I used to think to the degree to which going into the 60s and as a teenager, the credibility we gave to celebrities for no other reason than they could play bouncy bounce. Or they could sing a tune, or they could dance.
Hey, man, they're popular. I want to be popular. Oh, I wish I was them. Oh, can I be them? Oh, hey, maybe if I just attach myself to their hip, I can be one of them. I, too, can be famous. Ooh, I saw this kind of hero worship, you know, that people were attracted to. And, of course, our so-called culture. I didn't know what culture was. I didn't know what this thought process was. This isn't stuff that I just knew then. I just incrementally understood a certain thing. And I'm labeling myself a pseudo-racist because what I'm talking about is the narrative none of us want to talk about. We don't want to talk about race. We're afraid to be called a racist. Well, I'm here to tell you, racism is natural. Come on. Look at all those people in conservatism, in conservation, you know, people that care about animals. They want, you know, the universe to remain the same. They want nature to remain the same. Funny how perverted it is, though. They care more about the animals living a certain kind of consistent continuity in terms of respecting who and what they are than they do for human beings on this earth. We were all brought up, now I got to be real careful because as I often speak to, I'm not an academic. I have good common sense, good logic, good, you know. Well, when you've lived evil, when you've actualized evil, when you've got not only the gift of gab, but lusting in your heart, and you understand evil and how it works and how people are taken, and you know, you have a certain, while at the same time having a certain child's eyes of naivete, that gives you an interesting balance, and through the years I've been able to fairly assess, I don't judge, but fairly assess just what the hell is going on, and I've been seeing it, no one wants to talk about it. We've actually had our hands just tied behind our back by our inability to talk about race for what it is, knowing full well that to be a racist per se is not the same as being a bigot. I mean, it's okay, I guess, when you're the oppressed. Because, you see, when you're the oppressed, then you're supposedly, just like we exceptional human beings were the oppressed when it came to the Revolutionary War, yeah, we were oppressed behind goodness, and we made it right because all we did was simply take back what was ours. We weren't feeling oppressed. We were feeling robbed. We weren't feeling oppressed. So let's just get that right, huh? When we felt oppressed, that's when we left Europe to become those exceptional people by the attitudes of exceptionalism that said, you know, at this paradigm of a king being on top of me and creating a cultural class or a class identity that I can't and shouldn't have to be held to. So we have where those who are being supposedly oppressed. Oh, I know what I was talking about when I lost my mind before. The idea of the left being able to use the idea of, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side until you get there versus the man with no shoes until he met the man with no feet. I was brought up learning that people were starving around the world, and I was happy just to be able to survive in a kind of lifestyle that gave me clean clothes, a roof over my head, love, and, you know, so I, okay, stop. I was happy with what little I had.
No shoes.
But it seemed to me, growing up with those kids on the other side of the street, those political class, those trust fund babies, had an attitude of letting others they wanted to rule through the ability to get their trust by doing for them is to see how downtrodden they were. You have been oppressed by those people over there. You poor baby, you victim. We're going to acknowledge you as a victim. We're going to celebrate you as a victim. That's going to be a new role. I saw that with that TV show, Queen for a Day, and everything else. It just started up, taking people from the low class of life and turning them into victims. Turning them into victims. That's how the left gains its power. The left gains its power by making victims and celebrating it every step of the way. And if you look at all the incrementalizations, little seeds of thought, little powers of suggestion in the rhetoric and the dialogue and the movie scripts, all through a victim, somebody doing something to you. Boy, it's gotten so bad, it's created a popularity of contentiousness, hasn't it? You ever seen the reality shows now? It's all about contentiousness. You gotta be oppressed or being the oppressed. See, to me, it's either dominate or to be dominated. But to dominate with virtue is the idea. And that's what conservatism, who is blessed by God for the idea of goodness versus evil, and there's certain things that you should do for mankind, and it shouldn't be governed by the top down, but from the inside up, huh? Through the lessons that we sort of learn in that which is virtuous, no matter how you actualize your virtue, religion, what religion, etc. As far as I'm concerned, I'm only caring about if you're a good person or a bad person. Are you a good witch or are you a bad witch? Which are you? That's all I really care in the bigger idea of life. Because what good is it if you are someone who follows my own beliefs, but yet you stab me in the back? What good is that going to do me when no matter the kind of person you are, and then you end up doing this? It's like, you know, that Penn State debacle, right? Oh, boy, see how people are? See how stupid people are? How can you explain to me? Well, I don't want to go off task here. But I want to bring something up. I want to triangulate this into the manifesto. You know, we gotta have a song for the Communist Manifesto. The latest little thing with a point in the manifesto is the school lunch thing. The government taking being able to tell you what you can eat, indicating that, you know, your parents really aren't that smart. What do they know? And that's actually what they're saying. One of the points of the Communist Manifesto has a direct inference to discredit the family. Make them the source of every child's little trip. Emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Attribute prejudices, mental blocks, and the retardation of children to the suppressive influence of parents. In other words, the natural authority of a child. The natural authority of a child. Shouldn't be out of the family. Who's even thinking such a thing? Isn't this a number 42. Create the impression that violence and insurrection are legitimate aspects of the American tradition, that students and special interest groups should rise up and use united force to solve the problem, whether it's economic, political, or social problems. Let's talk about it's the culture stupid. It's the culture stupid, not the economy. It's all those things that we're finally starting to talk about because of this business with contraception and abortion. Make them victims. Make them victims. Yes, let's not accept that those of goodness that dare suggest that you refrain from having sex but just for the fun of it, especially at a young age. How dare they even plant a thought that says you children should be behaving only a particular way, especially while you're in my house, and until you grow up, even if it is 26 years old now, can you do what you want to do? No, instead it's like, you bad parents, telling those children they shouldn't have sex. And how have you been saying it? How have you been making them fearful of having done the wrong thing? The consequence, of course, the natural consequence, of course, is being pregnant. So isn't that, oh, aren't you lucky parents, huh? Isn't that just standard for you, that you've got a natural consequence that you've been using unjustly for, oh, so many years, against your own children's right to behave like the, why don't we do it in the road, huh? Like a bunch of animals, so we should be able to celebrate our sexual beings at any age. Make things perverted. What number is that in the Communist Manifesto? Everything that's going on today socially. Whether it's racism, whether it's homosexuality, sexualism, whether it's feminism, whatever ism you want to get into, you can find something directly involved with the Communist Manifesto. Fact. If I was really bright and I'd have them handy with me, I want to bring up the other ones. Let's flip this page, Tony. Yeah. Okay. Breaks down cultural standards of morality. Promoting pornography and obscenity in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and TV. Whoa! This is number 25. Now, before I go on with this, because this is fun, because you gotta know this, okay? You really have to know. I don't care what you know or what you think you know. I want to tell you what you don't know, because when you open your eyes to this stuff and you realize these are the bullet points of what I've been feeling and seeing, the sponge from which I'm squeezing right now in a free stream of consciousness, letting it go right out at the risk of all kinds of embarrassment. Oh, God, you were lousy. Boy, was I lousy yesterday. I was on, too. In my head, I was on yesterday, but I no sooner started than I went right off track, felt real uncomfortable, which is typically rare, and hadn't felt that bad in a while. Went 30 minutes with it before I played on a wonderful archive, and that was an archive no less, even though it was a good one. But today, I feel like I'm cooking. I really do. I make fun with this. It's amazing, the stuff that I know. That you know, intuitively, maybe not, you don't know how to express it, or you're certainly afraid to, and that's what this whole thing with this racism is. That's this whole thing with my notion of being a pseudo-racist, a new victim. A victim in which I'm ridiculed by those who irrationally judge you by being a racist because they can't use logic, reason, and deduction to form a legitimate argument, then therefore call you a racist when in fact you're not. You have been victimized. You're the new victim. It's the pseudo-racist. That's right. Remember that. Everything that's going on today in the culture, it's the culture, stupid. Forget about this economy stuff, okay? Let's get talk. I mean, we're trying to break down the church, Catholicism. Hey, I'm going to wake it up right now. Did the emperor take off his clothes finally for you all? Funny, man, you sound like this all the time. Even at home? Well, no, I mean, I'm in character all the time. Yeah. Number 24, the Communist Manifesto. Eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship. Triangulate, calling it censorship, accepting that premise. Check your premise. And then the violation of free speech and free press. Let me tell you something about perversion by definition. You know, a lot of things we have as laws now were never needed because people simply had manners. They had respect. They had a certain appreciation for one another. They had a certain amount of shame from which knowing right and wrong when they didn't behave right or correctly, they had a bit of shame. But perversion is when you take that out, when you take those equations out of there. And it allows for people that, under normal circumstances, everything being equal, certain actions wouldn't actualize out there in the universe. I mean, a real good example of that is the boom boxes, right? Can you imagine that? This is censorship to tell those cars to say, I mean, are they not invading your space? And isn't it simple common courtesy that when you're driving down the street and you got this, you know, gang-banging car with the wheels going and the boom box? Let me tell you what that's about. Let me tell you what that's about. That's thug mentality. That thug mentality, it's in-your-face mentality. It's the kind of mentality that the pop culture has allowed to foster. The whole idea of disrespect for your parents transfers, as far as I'm concerned, directly to disrespect for any kind of authority. And it's, again, it's the Communist Manifesto that gave permission and actually instruction. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. Number 26, don't you think that's what contraception is all about? Number 26, right there. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. And how do you do that? Unless you take away the guilt trip and the unintended consequence of getting pregnant. No. Let's take that tool that virtuous mommy and daddy said to their children, using a bit of leverage. You know it's not right to go out and just do it, honey. You know? Ideally, everything being equal, even though, hey, you know, I don't expect you to be perfect, but this is what we want to strive for. I'm not telling you that I won't love you if you do, but I'm going to tell you what you want to strive for. I know I didn't do it myself when I was a kid your age, but I wasn't out there every night. But after all, it isn't a matter of perfection. It isn't a matter of being absolute or not. It's a matter of to the degree of which. Yes, I went out with a half a dozen or so men before I met your husband. Yes, I was what my mother would refer to in the 30s and the 20s as promiscuous. We understand, dear, but I don't want you doing it every night, okay? And remember, you might get pregnant, so maybe you shouldn't do it at all. Well, the left is doing something, really taking that whole card away. They're taking that whole card away, just like it says here in the Communist Manifesto. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. Well, you're right. Now look at guys, gals, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to do the guy generic thing. I can't get this thing on the media. You got three gals sitting on the couch. Hey guys, what's going on? Or two gals and a guy or three. It's never three guys and a gal anymore. You got that? Particularly if they're white. So you got a problem with white? No, I'm Italian. You got it? I can do this. I'm the one that's been saying it. I've been the one that's been realizing it. I'm the one that you're listening to because you don't hear many other people talk about this stuff. It needs to be talked about. It's this very whole thing that I'm going around with that's put us into this trick bag, man. And what a trick. Trick's on you. It's no magic. It's just a trick. It's like three-card Marte. This whole business about racism. People should be able to celebrate who they are. And when they diminish who they are, I mean, and what is diversity? Is diversity making everything other than white? Mark my words. What we're doing here is eliminating all the history of Western civilization and the cultures that generated it. And we're doing it by mixed marriage, by implementing color into the culture, perverting it to where those who simply express the desire to keep their culture as pure or the same as racist, that's a false narrative. That's a false narrative that is so unfair, unjust, really just nasty. Just nasty. The essence of who we are. The essence of who we are. Being untangled and twisted like taking a rope and its fibers and just tossing them anywhere and then intermingling them with it and just saying, oh, you're the ones that are nasty for being. This is really about jealousy. This is really about, I want to be you, but I can't, so I'm going to take you down. It's the same way as talent. Instead of somebody performing or practicing so they can be better at something, so someone might be able to compete with you, instead they'd rather take you down to bring to your level. So, and it just really comes against the negative and the positive in the universe. It's all natural law. We've got to be able to start saying what is. And anything other than conservatism, anything that's the least bit liberal is evil, from which they try to give perversion the legitimacy in which to basis everything from. Look at this. Check this one out. Number 22. Continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. Eliminate all good sculpture from parks and buildings. Substitute shapeless, awkward, and meaningless forms. You cannot pick up a cultural nuance news event, something that's sexy for the media to entertain us with, and not find one of the points here in the Communist Manifesto. It's really just that simple. I use this notion of status anxiety that people who bought into the myth, and many of us have because we're a consumer culture, we've been trained into the idea that our whole existence depends and is measured by a new class system, a class system that's measured by what car you drive, what house you live in, the neighborhood you live in, et cetera, et cetera. And we've been sold this package of goods, and we've been buying. Now, look, at again, nothing's 100%, nothing's absolute. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But anything done without virtuous attempt for the greater social good of mankind, you're going to have a problem. And a problem we have. And it really comes down to, over and over again, the kind of person we are. The kind of person we are. Are you a good witch or are you a bad witch? Which are you? Obama's not going to be relinquishing power, okay? Get that straight in your head. That's another story. I guess I should focus on that maybe tomorrow. Because I really want to continue working on the train of thought. I really want to start being apparently the only one with the cojones and the ability to sell this, okay? Because even if something's the truth, it doesn't mean people buy it. You still have to sell it. And I'm a salesman, and I'm a salesperson that possesses virtue. I sell behind need, desire, and affordability. I don't sell behind evil, that which you sell behind need or a perceived need, creating a perceived need, making somebody a victim, greed, or fear. That's the other way people buy into things. And when you possess little to no virtue, you're bound to sell behind that. Hey, I've done that, okay, but to the degree of which, and I strive not to have to, but you know, in the final analysis, what's it all about? It's about survival, isn't it? See, that's the rub, isn't it, where a man says, well, wait a minute, Tony, you can really make it right in your own head now that it's on your side of the fence. But again, as long as you're someone that at least is thinking about it, you're bound not to be, how shall I say, to the degree of which, as bad as somebody else, if at all. I mean, because, you know, again, integrity is as soon as you start taking away just an ounce of integrity, then everything else seems to fall into that which is an illusion in one's mind if you're thinking you're still toeing the line. But I think one of the first things people need to understand is that there's a false narrative going on with this whole racist thing, that it's not irrelevant. I used to remember thinking, is there any Italian on that baseball? I was always looking for an Italian on the movie list. I was always looking for the AEIOAU. It's so natural, it's ridiculous. And, you know, the whole notion, I'm not, when you say Italian, I'm actually Sicilian. If I was in Italy, there'd be a problem. So there's all kinds of conversation on how you see yourself. I mean, it differs from one generation to the other, and of course, here we are, three generations from another. But the incrementalization of I think you're always going to have dialectical problems when you're in the actual countries to where my mother was Neapolitan, my father was Sicilian, and when you come to America, it's all Italian, right? I used to think about people immigrating from Italy to America, or anybody immigrating from over there into America. I always thought of it like wine. I always thought of it like being diluted, you know? That's how I see all of this stuff. I see the water to the wine. And then I further extrapolated from that, using the logical progression of thought. That was logic, reason.
All right, Tony, repeat that like you know it by heart.
I do. I know it by heart. And I'm proud to repeat it. Can I have a little star on my forehead, Daddy, please? I used to get stars when I was a kid in school, you know, a little star for doing good. I remember coming home from school with my report card that had my initials on the grades. AV. AVE. No, it was just AV. And I said, Mom, how come they got my initials? She said, that's average. Is that good? I guess. Well, when I think about the school education that we had in public high school and what they're getting today, I guess I was just plain lucky. Graduated in 1968 outside of Boston, Brockton, Mass. Public high school, had to wear a shirt and tie, college shirt, tie. You couldn't have long hair, no dungarees. It was the next year. See, I'm really destined to do this show to talk this stuff because my experiences and the timing of so many things that sort of was almost like the tsunami flow that sculptured my reality as I know it today, that sculptured my noesis, my knowing, was formed by a unique set of circumstances that just a year or two later would have been different. And I could point out to about 5, 6, or 7 of those throughout my life that are, in one small measure, insignificant. But the sum of its parts being greater than the whole have just told me, well, you know, this is too coincidental. This is just too coincidental. But just the year after 68, I had signed up for the Army when I was 17, went to Nam when I just turned 18. And the next year, they allowed, you know, with long hair, and it went right upside down, inside, upside down, boom. I often think of Jimmy Carter's reign of terror that started the real progressive movement. As I look back, I didn't know it then. I was probably more of a liberal thinker, thinking that's all I was. But I was always a conservative thinker when you get philosophical, when you get deep. I was just never prone to talk politics. But I was always a thinker, you know. I always thought about stuff, why people do what they do, why things are as they are, why aren't things this way, and I watch people and how they manipulate, and I get this sense of that some people are inherently good and some people are inherently bad. Are you a taker or are you a giver? And now, there's others too. Are you a sucker? You know, I tell people my name's Tucker, not sucker. So I've been watching all this racist stuff, all these oppressed people being used by those that want to take power from goodness. Do you notice how we in America was one country at a time? one country at a time where we really would have pulled together, sort of like a tug of war against anybody else. It was like America and anybody else. America and those that aren't American. Everybody seems to want to claim possession of America when it suits them, huh? But they don't want to do anything to protect it or defend it. Isn't that funny? But that's when we started giving it away, right? When we started disregarding the fact that, hey, this is ours! This is ours! What do you mean giving all of our technology away? Giving all of our weaponry away? Giving all of our trade secrets away? What is this stuff? I watch it as a human being thinking, saying, wait a minute, what is this feeling right? I guess when you have it good, it's easy to look at those that don't have it good. And if you are sold a pile of junk by those that want to make you feel guilty because you have, and those people who you have oppressed, because believe it or not, all those mean things that you capitalists did to grow this country, to make this country what it is today, but all those things you had to do to get there were bad things. Ooh. Oh, yeah, that's bad, all right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you unravel all the technology we have today, how did we get here unless it was one little step at a time? And sometimes people's toes got walked on. Life is no simple measure. Give me a break. Stop selling us a false load of goods. And people out there, stop buying it. You have no reason to feel guilty for anything because anybody has a certain amount of energy that they control and they own. We each own 24 hours a day. Nobody can take that away from you. Nobody can take that away from me. What you do with your time, what I do with my time, probably ends up being an unintended consequence. Your time that you spend today is probably going to be a direct result of unintended consequences tomorrow. Whoa, how about that? Now, you can either have things happen that you're in control of, or you can have things happen that you're not in control of. You can have things that create a productive unit of measure that might have something to do with the economy, like making money, or it might be something that you take internal pride for, internal measure, internal value for. What did you accomplish today? Not everything is dollars and cents. Not everything wealthy is healthy. Oh, Tommy, cut it out now. That's corny. All right, it was just off the top of my head. It was really there, and I couldn't resist. I admit, I cave in, I relinquish. Communist Goals, 1963, read into the Congressional Record on January 10th, 1963. It's an extension of the remarks of Honorable A.S. Furlong Jr. of Florida in the House of Representatives, Thursday, January 10th. Mr. Furlong, Mrs. Speaker, Mrs. Patricia Nordam of DeLand, Florida, is an ardent and articulate opponent of communism, and until recently published the DeLand Courier, which she dedicated to the purpose of alerting the public to the dangers of communists in America. At Mrs. Norton's request, I include in the record, under unanimous consent, the following current communist goals, which she identifies as an excerpt from The Naked Communist by Cleon Skelton. Are you radicals? Why aren't we hearing that in the media? Why aren't people talking about it? Why don't we hammer it home that we know what you're up to? Why don't we let them know that we know that while you're looking me square in the eye, you really have my hand on my tushy as you try to pickpocket me, and I don't even know it. I mistake it for a massage. I don't know why I mistake it for a massage. It certainly feels like you're taking the wallet out of my pocket, but you tell me it's for my own good, and I'll be feeling better, so I guess that's a massage, right? Why aren't we talking this stuff unless this whole business about I'm going to call it anything other than conservatism. Anything, there's conservatism, and then there's all others. At least when you got the real Kool-Aid drink, you should know who your enemy is. You know, the thing is cracking, the water's rolling right out of us, you know damn well it's a duck. But you get these people so elected to the degree of which are giving you enough to make you happy and thinking that one's a conservative, while meanwhile sort of softening up the territory for the agenda that's really out there in the universe, other than conservatism. Hey, man. Appreciate your time. I appreciate your time. I've been doing the show for 3 years, and I value time. I tell you that the one thing that makes us all equal is the time that we have. We each own our 24 hours and what we do and how we place a value upon it, and I certainly value yours because, you know what, birds of a feather flock together. I am my audience. That which is attracted to you defines you. Yes, guilty by association. I am you, and you are me, and we are all together. Yes, conservative radio hour.
Run like pigs from a gun, see how they fly. I'm coming. So when you hear me speak and the things I say, I'm speaking to my people.
Some of the representatives are saying that we're bringing it upon ourselves, what we're putting out there, what some of the artists are putting out in their lyrics is degrading their own people. And then you have some of the heads saying it's what people want. What do you think?
Well, you can say something about drugs. What people want. You can say something about rape. That's what they want. You can say something about child molestation. We ain't supposed to fight against it.
Y'all niggas, and you gon' be niggas forever. Just
black
up,
nigga. You're not niggas.
Let me show you the difference between niggas and black. Black men is in action, niggas is all act. Niggas talk out they ass, niggas know no fact. Black men respond intelligently, niggas react. No tactic, no tact, while black men struggle to overcome.
Make you nervous? Is that a topic we shouldn't be discussing? Is this what America has been led to believe, to sort of quiet those that have been portrayed as the oppressor? The oppressed, now the victims. The victims now celebrating the pop culture, legitimizing those victims and giving them a sense of, oh, woe is me, oh, woe is me. Been watching it, folks. Been watching all these been put into a trick bag, like it's a little magic trick.
One thing I got out of it was magic I'd like to share with you. You know, it's like I was leaving and I was sitting in the hotel and a voice said to me, he said, look around, what do you see? And I said, I see all colors of people doing everything, you know. And the voice said, do you see any niggas? And I said, no. And I said, you know why? Because there aren't any. And it hit me like a shot, man. I started crying and shit. I was sitting there. I said, yeah, I've been here 3 weeks. I haven't even said it. I haven't even thought it. And it made me say, oh, my God, I've been wrong. I've been wrong. I got to regroup my shit. I mean, I said, I ain't gonna never call another black man a nigger.
Now, you see, I think there's a lot of, like, legitimacy to that remark. If black people can call another brother nigger, hey, nigger, come on, the word must not mean anything. It just simply must not. How silly. I'm just talking about something bigger silly here. Because the bigger picture is all you oppressed have been told that you have been oppressed in your history means absolutely squat to me. It's another invalid premise. That the history, otherwise, I mean, we are starting to give casinos to the Indians. I mean, this is all the left. In this world, it's tough, you know. You either conquered or you be conquered. But you do so behind a structure of virtue. Structure of goodness, so that even though you're dominating, you're thinking, I mean, look at America. Gosh, when we go to war and bring people some peace, I don't care about the military industrialized concept. That's called rational self-interest, making a profit. Has it been perverted because of their own lack of virtue? Yes. But let's not kill the paradigm, folks. You know that little simple paradigm that speaks to survival. You know, no big deal. What's a little bit of survival, huh? Doesn't matter to me. The oppressors. We are the oppressors. Those meanies have been doing you harm. And for that, you're owed a penance from which you're going to be beholden to me, your newfound idol, your newfound pop idol, your newfound belief system that helps you
how to behave behind a group thought. A group thought that's left behind the whole notion of what's in it for me with doing nothing. Low standards and poor decisions have been made by all of us. But they're made in certain areas of our culture. And coincidentally, some of the population that inhabits that culture is of color. Hey, I was in the same socioeconomic challenge that these people face, and you know what? I didn't give myself an excuse, even though I, you know, did the things I shouldn't have done, no different from anybody else. I didn't look to blame others for my destitute reality that I put myself in, because I still owned my 24 hours. I still was equal as that next person. We have trained, the left has trained, people of color and people of need, people of distinction, people of here's the other thing, us exceptional Americans versus the exceptions to the rule. That's what we really have here. We have exceptional Americans versus exceptions to the rule. And the left gains power by touting them and creating a paradigm of making them all victims, even when they are. It's like you're ready for this. Calling the kettle black. I actually wrote something down. I gotta figure this one out. I thought I had it on the top of my head. But I was going 1,000 miles an hour. All I got to listen to is about a couple minutes of anybody's talk. I was listening to Rush this morning, and he was talking about, coincidentally, because I was coming through this stuff big time in my head in the shower. I always get some profound thinking done in the shower or driving in early morning hours, you know, as the sunset comes up, and you get that deep kind of, you're getting right at the core. I almost feel like I can do 3 shows by the time I'm out of the shower. Probably do inside my own head, but by the time I put it together, this free stream of consciousness. You gotta remember, I look at things through the eyes of a child. I look at these things as what you're modeling as an adult, into the eyes of a child from which a child should be seeing. Having the duality of thought that says, as an adult, yes, I might do a thing this particular way, but I don't want to project it out there in the world as normal. I know I'm not perfect because I'm a human being. I possess free will. But I strive to do the ideal thing. Do as I say, not as I do! We were told we were hypocrites. Alinsky's Rules for Radicals said, use that on them. Use that hypocrisy thing on them. Well, there's a difference between hypocrisy and duality, particularly when the purpose in which you're using it for. It isn't about the rule you're breaking. It's about why you're breaking it. Is it for something for the better good? Or is it for something those other people are trying to tell you is good too? It's just a matter of my choice. Oh, the poll says 40% says this is good. 60% says it isn't good. Oh, well, gosh, I guess I'm not that bad then if I'm not doing what is good. Because somebody over here, and by the way, that's how we illegitimize the whole notion of good and bad, don't we? And as a pseudo-racist, I'm gonna celebrate my victimhood. I think that's the new N-word. You know, I can say the word nigger. I've been told I was a WAP, guinea, dago. I don't think it's the word per se. I think it's why you use the word and who you use it for. I think if you haven't got something good to say, then, and you say it anyway, you just might be a liberal. I think people who are responsible can speak honestly to one another. I can actually speak to a gay, a homosexual person with respect to that person per se in front of me as I speak to the idea of what we have conflict with, while respecting their unique dignity and humanity right then and there. I can do that.
Oh, I'm sure others would comment on it and make like I wasn't doing that. But I think anybody that has a half of, I mean, it's, again, it's like this stuff that we see lies told to us, but knowing full well that 80% of everybody else is believing it. Pretty scary stuff, isn't it? When you see this, what's going on in the media. See, that's really my thesis. It's about what we're not being told by the media. It's about the distortions of the media. Mm-hmm. A pseudo-racist is a victim who irrationally ridiculed is a bigot, actually. Racism is okay, being a bigot isn't. This is little notes I took. Recognize your differences. Isn't racism simply acknowledging the differences we have as human beings? Isn't that just an expression of who we are? Yeah? These are the thoughts that were going through my head this morning. I mean, if you're not proud of who you are, while others are proud of themselves, when instigated by the left, you see the jealousy and they call it racism because they really want to be you. I often thought that the balance between a man and a woman made the man sane and made the woman strong and the woman nurtured and the man provided and protected, right? Behind the family unit for the procreation of man, which is, I think, the first major, what's it all about, Alfie? You know, it's about survival. It's about survival of the species. It's about the proliferation of mankind, and you do that best in a family unit, a man and a wife, a man and a woman, a woman balancing the male, a male balancing the woman. But the balance has gone off because we perverted it. Women want to be men. They don't hate anyone. Isn't that something? I mean, men haters, and yet they want to be men. It's sort of like a passive aggressive. You know, it's hard. It's hard to be emotionally healthy. It's hard to get a distinctive, honest, unbiased discussion with such things. And it's been perverted. It's been accepted. It's been normalized. Part of the Communist Manifesto. I've been reading throughout the hour here. Go back and catch the archive if you missed it. And feel free anytime to call in. I love callers thinking about anything they want to. It's 347-677-1563. And guests, I love new members. You can take a minute. You don't even have to use a real name. And that way you can sort of type in the chat room and so forth. Been doing the show for about 3 years with the intention of being able to say the kinds of things that nobody else seems to be saying, and I know how to sell it. I know how to sell these things, and I sell it behind virtue, need, desire, and affordability. We all know what I'm talking about. But those that control the pipeline, those that control the media, those that have access, it isn't so much, see, here's the biggest thing when people say, well, you know, I can tune them out. I don't listen to Fox. I don't listen to that. It's not about that. We know you who have a certain awareness. Got it. I'm talking about the 80% of the others, of which 20% of them are their Kool-Aid drinkers, right? 20% of them are the real hard. I'm concerned with the other 60 that are being bombarded, manipulated, persuaded, top of the mind awareness, on points of fact, I was, oh man. You can't hear it on public TV anymore. Some of the greatest shows they do, and they do some good work, but it's all slanted now with liberalism, communism, all of this global warming stuff, all of this evil capitalism stuff. Very nuanced. Very nuanced. Scary. Artfully done. Sort of like a, you know, it's going to be a trip. Wouldn't you love to be at one of their parties? These hollow wood types, you know, those hollow people, those people that have an echo when they speak because it's all hollow. Hollywood. Hollywood is is art reality or is reality art? Let's make reality an art form.
Let's create things because we can. What's the first reason anybody does anything? Anybody know? Do you know the first reason anybody does anything? I mean, when you think about it, Bill Clinton was right on the, you know, because, oh, Billy Baby, the first Hollywood man, pop culture president, huh? He had a little Kennedy-esque in him, didn't he? I think he did. He certainly was, he had the brains for it, but he possessed, he did not possess, I mean, hey, I'm no better. Virtue-wise, but he certainly didn't possess the virtue that we like to think that those that are serving us would possess. Although I'm not as much concerned about the virtue they possess as much as the virtue they actualize. Or not so much the virtue they possess, but the evil they don't possess or actualize. That's what I'm more concerned with. But he had it right, you know, I mean, and it goes to why does anybody do anything? Because they can. That's the first thing. You got to have that as a foundation. Because you only will if you can. You only will do it if you can. Now, this is where liberalism and conservatism goes astray. Because even though you can, what's the virtuous person say? What's the person with virtue say? Should I? Isn't that the logical progression of thought for people that possess goodness? But usually, before you do anything because you can, you usually have something that speaks to the marketplace before, you know, you have a need. And that usually brings up through logical progression of thought the thought pattern that says, okay, I need to do this, and then the next thought is, can I do it? And you're either able to or you can't. But if that's the first thing you think of by saying, because I can, if that's the first thing you think of, I'll tell you what, that's fucked up, baby. Pure presidential arrogance. I'm a rock star. If I was a band, nobody would say anything, but I'm the president, but I'm a rock star. Whoop goes down the pants and boom. Because you can. He had no need, but he could. So he did. This was frivolous? Yes. Was it frivolous? Yes. But in the bigger sense of the word, I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. How many times did you want to do something for somebody, but you couldn't, right? The opposite of you can, you couldn't, right? I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. Simple. People sometimes have a hard time saying no to people when they really can't do it for them. So just say you can't. I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. Now, if I could, but I won't, that's another story. That's another story. I could, but I'm not. How would you get away with that one? Well, Joey, no, I really could help you. I remember last time you ripped me off, you idiot. Well, no. I mean, come on. You don't need to go there, Tony. You don't need to express that negative energy, baby. Oh, really? Oh,
I'll do as I do, as my mother always said to me, Anthony. You're going to do damn well as you please. I mitigated it with virtue. I had a nice balance, nicer sauce, you know.
Tony, stop mocking the Italian language because you know so little of it like nothing. Gosh, my parents never taught me the language. They always used it to be able to talk behind our back while in front of us. How do you feel when people of another language talk in front of you without excusing themselves? You know, I grew up with people, with my parents, with my uncles, with my family members, excusing somebody if they were going to speak the language. At the dinner table or something like that. I knew the other person couldn't speak it. Whatever happened to manners, respect, simple decency, huh? You know, I sometimes mock military veterans. In my head, I mock them. I mean, because there's nothing to mock. Who always want to talk about yesteryear in the war days, you know? Or
always harking back to the war. Well, boy, I'll tell you what, I harken back to the 60s and 70s, this articulation that I sort of squeezed the sponge of the culture drift. The winds, it's almost like a jet stream, huh? The jet stream about culture as it transpired through the manipulation of the left, helped by the technology and the media. And I've been seeing it with a unique kind of eye that doesn't come from the academia, it just comes from the observational. It's like I'm an observationalist until I looked it up in Google, and it was actually something for an observationalist, and guess what? The liberals took that, too. Well, it's another perversion of... See, I thought observation was a great word for his. Matter of fact, maybe I'll challenge that. Maybe I'll just challenge that, because to observe literally means to simply assert. It's like versus. It's like judge versus assess. I don't fancy myself judging ever. I assess. Because, hey, leave it not for me to judge, pal. You see the things I let myself get away with, or try to, or fool myself. I never fool myself. I always know what I did, if it was good or bad. I just do it anyway. No. We make it right in our head. We always do. We say, well, I'm doing this because, but deep down, we knew. I mean me. Me. Tony Evanuti. The new Newty. N-E-W. Don't you like Newt? Come on. He's the only adult in the room, man. The only one. Look at what he nails down points. I mean, he's on point with things he's going to do. They actually make sense. Any person that can see, when people don't see him for what he is, and they can only go back to, oh, you know, there's three wives. Listen to me. The first thing I take when somebody says that is, oh, you must not like Newt. Let's get that out of the way, shall we? You're dealing emotionally. You do not like Newt. So end of argument. I'm not going to go any further with you, because how can I even have a chance at an honest discussion and bringing you to certain some points of awareness that you shan't beat up because it's simply fact and logic, little rational thought, you know. Hey, I know it sounds like a law firm, but it's not. If you think it is, you just might be a liberal. Gosh, did you hear about the little kid that turned his grandfather in for making him hike the Grand Canyon Trail? I guess he got arrested, the grandfather, for a kid. They actually had a witness say, yeah, I saw the man pushing the kid up the hill. Grandfather simply said, hey, I'm just trying to make a, you know, he's obese, he's overweight, I'm just trying to make a man out of him. God, can you imagine basic training in the Army now? Ooh, what a bunch of wusses. Are we turning into some sissies or what? Pretty soon, women are going to be growing whiskers. And pretty soon, all us men are going to have no hair at all. You see, it all began with razor blades. A lot of business in razor blades, you know. That's what takes the hair off of men. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we could really get, you know, metrosexualized. Marginalized, picking that beast out of you. Hello, this is Man Beast Central. Can I help you? Yeah, we got a few knuckle dragging Neanderthals out here. What would you like? What kind of flavor would you like today? I don't know. One's off busy. He hasn't been back in a while. I won't miss him. He's a pain in the butt. Male supremacy movement. I'll start that up, huh? Come on, girl. Don't you want the man to be superior to you? Especially if he's kind, not nice. You don't want him if he's not kind. I mean, okay, let me ask you this for all the women out there. Do you want to be able to say to yourself, I'm smarter than that guy and I'm more talented? Or are you going to look for somebody a little bit smarter than you and more talented than you and suddenly give them the regard of being, by definition, a man? Do you feel like you're, in effect, subordinate to that man by being deferring, by deferring to his judgment? Do you see yourself as subordinate? Do you see yourself as a victim, not knowing or understanding that that man is worshiping you? because that's what God tells him to do, to see how his lady is, just like his mother is. He treats his mother like a queen. He treats his gal like a princess. It's all good. It's all good. We should strive for that, yeah? I think so. So I got to talk about it every now and again. I'll talk about it. I'll talk about a lot of things. I'm just a pseudo-racist. I've been victimized myself. I've been called a racist. Oh, you're a racist. I'm Italian. Hey, I'm neither white nor black. Afro-American, Negro, Caucasian, white. I had two Irish cousins, half Italian, half Irish. I guess there is something to be said about the male species or the male descendancy taking priority because they ID'd themselves as Irish. So it wasn't even a color thing where when you've got a black guy and a white lady or vice versa, the color's always going to come out because, of course, you know, pigmentation of Caucasians is a little bit neutral. Now, I'm speaking out of my tailbone. I'm not an academic, so I'm sorry. Get over it, okay? But that's done intellectually, isn't it? It's almost like a natural. The man, the father. The father, the husband, the lead role. I mean, come on. The one that protects you has the dominant role. He has the power to protect and survive, to make with courage the distinction of being a man, a male. A knuckle dragging Neanderthal, Tony Venuti, live from Tucson, Arizona, folks. 1 to 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I've been doing it, what, 2 to 4 now? I think I'm going to move it up. I'm going to move it up to like 3 or I think I'm going to move it up to, let me see, what would it be? It would be 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Or 5, whatever I can get away with here with Blog Talk Radio. Because I'm, you know, I'm doing a little bit of work now, having lost my paper, Arizona Tourist News. One day, I may tell you the whole story of this. Because it's like, just one of those things. Being released from federal penitentiary in 1985, forming a business, keeping a dozen people employed, doing about $100,000 a month in cash flow. I sort of understand the yin and the yang of all what's going on in this life right here, and I know how to talk it, and I know how to sell it. I know that my point of view is sort of like a little rough and raw around the edges, but it's what needs to be talked about in the way that it needs to be talked about. We've been getting fooled for a long, long time. We've not pushed back and called what essentially is a spade a spade. A spade is calling us racist for calling it a spade. Is that, I mean, we're calling the duck a duck, and we're being called racist, okay? And I'm here to tell you that's a false paradigm. And I'm even here to say, let's take the wind out of that sail. First of all, let's recognize there's a difference between being racist and being a bigot. There's a difference in racism between being racist and a bigot. It's natural to be racist. It's not nice, it's not virtuous to be a bigot. To judge anybody by the color of their skin is a bigot. Don't take away the fact that I'm special as a human being from which... Now, see, when you look at my heritage, I mean, no one's 100% anything. I mean, how many black people have white... I mean, gosh, people really freak out, especially black people, to know how much white they have in them. A lot of black people have no clue. I remember when, what was it, Roots came out? The author, gosh, his name's on the tip of my tongue. He said he went to Africa, and for the first time, he had tears come from his eyes for the first time he realized how black he was not, how less than pure he was not. He took shame in having ownership of his heritage when he realized he wasn't as pure as them. It was deep. But we've got the whole black culture in America today giving no credibility to the white, Western, civilized blood they have in their skin. Alex Haley, yes. Alex Haley. Roots. Well, that was done in the 70s. You know, that was 40 years ago. See, this stuff was going through my head when I'm 20, 25 years old, so forth. But it cohesifies through my life because I take all these little, again, some of it's parts are greater than the whole, right? It was almost like an embarrassed self-acknowledgement that he took credit for being black when he wasn't nearly as black as he thought he was. When he saw his true descendants. Yeah, I think the whole thing with black culture, African American culture, Negro culture, is like anybody else's culture. It's the sum of its parts together. It's like an accumulation of everything. Everything that's happened in your life, everything that's happened in your culture is a direct example of all the parts of every day and every experience. They're yours. You own them. I think we don't get enough credit that instead of minimizing our guilt of being called, you know, oh, look at what you did with those slaves. Instead of neutralizing it with this, and we'd be very easily neutralized. Because if you think about it, slavery did have some unintended consequences, didn't it? It certainly did, huh? Certainly made the lives of the descendants of those blacks a lot better than they would have ever been, ever. I mean, if you think about it, they would have never come to America if they were never enslaved. And they would still be in tribal generations years later, not with a color TV, not with an education, not civilized. Now, I may be speaking through my tailbone because I mean, there's different levels of all of that stuff. But as well, the bottom line is this. We've been told a pack of lies with this whole slavery thing. The first slave masses were blacks themselves. It was blacks in Africa that helped manipulate with the English to bring them over there. Isn't that true? Nobody wants to talk about this stuff because we're afraid to talk about it. Am I making you nervous? Come on. You can tell me. I'm just an ex-con. You can tell me anything you want. I won't judge you. It is what it is. You can be anywhere you want to be. Just cop to it, okay? Just tell me straight up so that I can decide to turn this way or to turn that way. Or maybe to run, get out of Dodge real quick. You know, an axe murderer, all I got to do is get a bigger axe, right? If he tells me, hey, you know what, Tony? I'm an axe murderer. Well, thank you for telling me that. I'm going to get out of your face. Oh, I mean, hey, can I have that axe over there? That one that's a little bit bigger than the one he's got. Thanks a lot.
Barbara Streisand on Larry King Show live yesterday, his last show. Cut five, go.
Well, I had wished, because I even left town. I went to Europe because of this last election. I couldn't face, I didn't want to be here for this bloodbath. There was no reason for the Republicans to win that many seats in the House, I didn't think. And that was, a mistake on the Democrats' part for not getting their message across, not communicating all that they've done that's good.
Oh, Larry King has one more show. Isn't she a genius, Barbara Streisand? Isn't she all that they've done that's good? When's the last decent song this woman has sung?
What's it all about, Alfie? What's it all about when you sort it out, Alfie?
Well, it's all about social survival. That's all I know, and that's publicized speech, okay? Once we start responding to our inability to speak the truth to power, the truth to color, because of our status anxiety that we exhibit each and every day, because we're afraid of what others will think about us, will be to the degree that we stay handcuffed. It's really just that simple. Now, I think we need to start talking about the social issues of the day, because it isn't about the economy. It's about the culture. It's about where we're going. We're being told a pack of lies by the media. We got things going on in every aspect of our community. In this inspirational conversation that I try to have you each and every day, is to bottom line a couple things. First, bear with and maintain strength. And above all, never forget that may you live in interesting times is the greatest thing one can behold right now with what's going on politically, with what's going on culturally. Man, I feel beat down too. I really do. I've been doing this show for 3 years because I feel it's my destiny. I really do. Besides, I'd rather be wrong moving forward than right standing still, because I never want to go to bed dead without the idea that I gave it my all. Now, to me, that's the essence of who someone is one's ability to go for broke, win, lose, or draw. I'll be right back.
Talking about virtue and evil and how evil exists but for one reason. To have a field day on good. To have a field day on good. Do you know what a measure of goodness is that I think is universal in the world? And by being able to understand a measure of goodness, we can maybe identify evil. Do you think a measure of goodness, as I see it, is that which you appreciate in cherish the life of children? We talk about the American dream like it's something you buy at a five and dime that all of a sudden we've been given the right to own. But I've always seen life as through the eyes of hope and dreams of a child and what they can become, what a child can become. The goodness, being able to take something so precious and turn it into the greatest human being known to mankind. But what do you think about people who use children? What do you think about people who take away the hopes and dreams of children? What do you think about people that turn certain children into victims and make them feel less than valued, less than worthy of self-esteem, less than worthiness of what they can bring to their own selves? What do you make of that? I think that's pretty bad. When you think about the education of a child, that stands right in front of you when you talk about the grace of children and their hopes for their future. I've talked about my understanding to the incrementalization of a deliberate attempt, I believe, that I've been witness to for 50 years unwittingly, knowing full well that there's people up there pulling strings against the best interests of mankind. I told you about sitting next to Albert DeSalvo in Walpole State Prison after my first tour of duty inside of a prison where the first week inside, what they showed us for a film, what they showed us for entertainment, was The Longest Yard. Not only did it celebrate negative behavior and criminal behavior, but it essentially celebrated the idea about being antagonistic with prison guards. So I looked at this and I slid down in my chair. I remember here I was, 21 years old, and I said to myself, ah, I get it. This is all just but one little game. But one little game. What we have here is the education czar from years gone by. Talk about this is Charlotte Ezerby deliberately dumbing down of our culture, and this is her firsthand account of it.
My name is Charlotte Thompson Ezerby, and I served as senior policy advisor in the United States Department of Education under the Reagan administration, during which I had access to all of the most important documents for the restructuring of not only American education, but global education. And I'm also the author of The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, which gets into all of this, gives the background of what I saw not only in the Department of Education, but as a local school board member. I was trained to identify the resistors, to the sex ed, drug ed, alcohol ed, suicide ed, death ed, those good, smart Americans who realize that anything that has education hanging off the end of it is probably not what they're looking for. I was trained to identify those good people and to go up against them and actually to go and try to get them to join us through the group process system, make them feel important, get them on a committee. And when that just blew my mind. I have to say, people often ask me, what is it that got you involved in education? Well, finding out what I saw at the local level certainly upset me. When I went and I saw that Americans were being trained to identify resistors, you know, then I got pretty upset. And luckily, there was a big book that came with the in-service training called Innovations in Education, A Change Agent's Guide. And I was able to take that back home with me. Unbelievable examples of how to con the Christians and different people who are upset with what you're trying to do, how to bring them over to your side, case studies, true case studies of educators who had put programs in that normally, you know, in a normal American town, nobody would want them. How did they manage to get them in? How did they con the people? And the other thing was, not only was I trained to identify the resistors, I was trained to go to the important people, high-profile, highly thought-of people in the community with the Rotary, Chamber of Commerce, Garden Club, you name it, the different groups in our towns. Go to them and convince them of the importance of these new programs like sex ed, drug ed, I just mentioned all of them, and to get them on your side, because when you can get the leadership in a community to go along with it, then the newspaper comes in and says, you know, a committee's been set up with the head of the Rotary and this and that, and they're all getting behind this task force to discuss whether we're going to have a new sex education program. And then when Mary Jones, you know, who ordinarily would think, why would we want to have a sex education program when we don't have any problems with kids having sex or anything, so she might be you know, concerned. She might be one of the resistors. She reads that her best friend, who's the head of the garden club, is on this committee, and she thinks, oh, well, hey, Mary Appleton is on the committee. She's heading it up. It must be okay. So I was taught really how to con the community. They always call everybody by the first name. You have to get very, you know, affectionate with people, and you say, William, you know, I'm so glad you've come to this meeting, and I understand your concerns about this program because, you know, I've had other people. Usually it's the really bright people in the community who have these concerns. And would you like to join our group? The original program was funded by what would subsequently become my office. It was funded by the Office of Research in the U.S. Office of Education because it was funded early on, about the late 60s. Still funded, by the way. And the money went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor to a professor by the name of Ronald Havelock. And he was the one that put together the whole training, the whole seminar, the book. And in the back of the book you had, they admitted it, right in the back of the book, they have about 100 major change agents listed from all over the country. Some of them I recognize, some I still don't, but some I do. And so this was a very important project. And it was being, you know, it was being carried out in our, I'm sure, all over the country, not just where I was. This was in Searsport, Maine, this lovely little town on the coast of Maine, in the school there where they were, where the guy came in, the facilitator, not Mr. Havelock, not Professor Havelock, but a facilitator, to train us. And these were good people that were there. You know, they were some of the teachers from my school, where I was on the local school board, principals, et cetera, normal-looking Americans. You know, you really ask yourself, they must themselves have reacted very much the way I did. That's why I've always had a lot of understanding for teachers that have to go through this stuff. I didn't have to continue going through it. They've had to, through the years, constant training, retraining, sensitivity training, break their values. Right, no wrong. You've got to have all religions represented, so, you know, tolerant of everything, and because that's the New World Order. Disorder, excuse me. Professor Benjamin Bloom is probably the most important behavioral psychologist ever to live. I mean, maybe not quite as much as Pavlov and Skinner, but he really implemented the system in education in the United States. And he was the author of The Taxonomy of Educational Objectives. And I know that doesn't mean much to us. It means a lot to teachers. They know. All teachers have to go through that, Bloom's taxonomy. And just to give you an idea of how blatant they are, Benjamin Bloom said the purpose of education, and I often say this to parents, really, listen to this. You think the purpose of education is reading, writing, and arithmetic? The purpose of education is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. And then he goes on and he says, he defines good teaching, and this is even worse from the parental standpoint, as challenging the students' fixed beliefs. And then, in some of his works that I have, they're in my book, a lot of this stuff is in
it. When he says challenge, did he mean challenge or did he mean change? Change their...
Yeah, through challenging. It's through challenging. You go up against them, and you change them. And you asked a good question, because then he goes on in one part of the taxonomy that is in my book, he says that he can take a student from here to there, from a belief in God or his country or whatever, to being an atheist and not believing in this country in 1 hour. Oh, yeah, he does it. And I've seen it with students. I've seen it with young people. And they don't even know, and teachers don't even know. That's why if you talk to teachers about it often, they'll really have an awfully hard time dealing with it. And if you go up to a superintendent, an educational administrator, superintendent or whatever, and you ask him, or her, have you ever been through sensitivity training? They'll usually crack up because they went through it. They are the worst, those programs. I've been through them. I mean, how can anything be worse than some of the ones that the regular classroom has? But they're the worst. To bring about change, they put them through role-playing, psychodrama, all these psychological techniques where they play the part of starving children and the other one plays the part of a very wealthy industrialist child. And, you know, they bring about the attitude and value change through the emotions. You know how young people are. You know, they're naturally very altruistic and they want to help and they don't like to see poverty around the world. And so what they'll do is, just like I think I mentioned to you earlier, or I don't know whether I did, going into the teacher putting in the new social studies program in our community and walking through, having taken little tots through town and identifying big, rich people's houses and small, poor people's houses. That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Getting them young and making them feel sorry for the people who live in the trailer across from the captain's house because they only eat hot dogs, not steak. And then they'll do the same thing with Ethiopia or wherever, some third world country, showing them the children dying. And then they'll show pictures of our affluence. And what do you eat for breakfast? Oh, you have eggs and bacon and cereal and orange juice and grapefruit. And everything, yum, yum, yum. Do you really think it's fair? Common unity. That's what we call it, common unity. It is no rule for the individual in the community. And for everything that goes on in the Soviet Union, or communism, is based on this community, the commune.
Collectivism and more. Boy, you want to talk about sinister stuff, huh? This is the kind of sinister stuff that is going on in our schools today, and you got it right here firsthand. It is, like, scary. That was Charlotte Iserbit deliberately dumbing down.
She was in the White House, I guess, 10 or 15 years ago as the education director. I mean, wow. Behavior modification. If you don't know intuitively that someone's not looking out for the best interests when you see them being the governance, the people governing, the people we trust to make the kinds of decisions, sort of like adopting a parent. Isn't it when we vote somebody into office sort of like adopting a parent? Isn't it like the pirates adopting a warrior chief, huh? Somebody to lead them?
Folks, this is Tony Vinity, and you've been listening to Another Day in the Life. Yeah, this ought to be a reality show, don't you think? Don't you think this Tony Vinity hour, this 2 hours of ranting and raving, your high witness to the pop culture, trampling over our traditional culture like a sponge, I bring you back a free stream of consciousness each day, Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Soon I'm going to be moving up the time a little bit, probably closer to later on in the afternoon, another 2 or 3 hours up ahead. But, hey, thanks for coming by today. I value your time. Ciao, baby. Thank you. treat okay?
Okay.